We'll be finished in an hour. It's Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, streaming live on the Odyssey app, iHeartRadio, and tune in. Check out the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to yours. Craig Hoffman, Anthony Haney, super producer of the show over there. And, well, you were outside this weekend. How much of WNBA All-Star Weekend did you take in from the outside?
So I caught the skills challenge. I caught the championship round of the three-point contest. I didn't get to watch much of the game. I did see what happened after the game, though.
What do you mean by what happened after the game?
The post-game interview.
Which one?
With Nafisa Collier.
Oh, talking about the pay us what you owe us and all that stuff? Yeah. With Slim in the background?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I also saw the snippets of the halftime show.
Yes, Glorilla. I was actually very disappointed in the league / ESPN for that. Like, I think they just took like the in-arena feed of that, and the sound quality wasn't like it didn't translate to TV as well as it should have.
Nah,
which is kind of disappointing. Like, hey, can y'all show Glorilla the respect she deserves / the W All-Star Game proper respect? Putting that aside, I thought it was an interesting weekend on a number of fronts. And what I find most interesting is something that I saw Ramona Shelburne pondering about on social media, where she said, because I thought about this during the game, and then she like put it on in a post, and I was like, yeah, that's what I was thinking. And Ramona posited that WNBA All-Star Weekend functionally wasn't really that different from NBA All-Star Weekend. Like, the game was not close. It was, like, the players were kind of goofing off. You had some incredible shot making. Like, there was the four-point shot, and there was a lot of them hit. But, like, it was so unserious that at the end of the game, Kiki had actually missed a couple of threes and fours, because they did, like, the four-point shot bit. And she is on the opposite team of Breanna Stewart. Kiki misses a four-point attempt. Stewie gets the rebound, gives the ball back to Kiki, who is on the other team, and Kiki hits a four-pointer, which was hilarious and fun, and Kiki's doing a big celebration, putting the four in her face. Like, it was a very fun watch, but, like, not for competitive basketball reasons. It was a bunch of athletes, like, goofing off, and it was fun to see them having fun with it. There were some pretty funny interviews during the game. Kelsey Plum, Caitlin Clark. You know, I thought the league, by the way, did and ESPN, I'll give them credit, did the correct amount of Caitlin Clark. Like, she wasn't playing in the game and wasn't able to, but, like, she was included, and as she should be, as one of the stars of the league, if not the biggest star in the league, and especially on the host weekend element of it. They didn't overdo it, but I thought they did. They got that dosing of a player who was the biggest star and the host, but not actually playing due to injury, exactly right. But overall, like, the non-seriousness of the game, it didn't seem like anybody cared. And maybe it's in part because the CBA negotiations were hovering over all of this and there was like a seriousness to it. My other theory is that the W as a league is more competitive night in, night out than the NBA is in terms of fan perception. I don't know that that's actually true, but like when you watch a W game, you're like, oh, they're trying to kill each other. Like the competitiveness and the physicality has been a storyline. Positive or negative, versus the NBA over the course of 82 games, like not every game feels like it's playoff intensity in the same way that the W does. And so I think the fact that it's like, man, can we just watch y'all play hard sometime outside of May and June? I think there's probably some frustration with that, but it is something I thought of where I was like, damn, nobody seems to be complaining that the W players, and maybe it's some of the money. Like, I'm just curious, like, why did we have this, like, hey, this is fun. Everyone seems to be having fun reaction to the W game, where I feel like in the NBA, maybe this is it too. This was kind of Ramona's theory, is like authentically, it seemed like the ladies were having fun. The fellas in the NBA game seem like they're annoyed they have to be there. And I think just that element of it is enough to like tip the scales in your viewing experience to feel like, oh, they're having fun. I'm having fun. I don't care that the score is 180 to 160.
Yeah, no, it definitely was good to see them having fun. I got on Twitch, and it was Twitch and Threads, and I saw Courtney Williams and
Got the stud buds,
Tisha Heideman,
the stars of All Star Weekend.
Man, hey, Craig, they took us behind the scenes, like literally with every player.
They outed like four couples.
Yeah, they did.
So funny.
But it was just good to see everybody, you know, just letting their guard down and just, you know, having fun. And I think the amount of games, and I think they haven't necessarily voiced it, but I'm pretty sure they don't like the amount of games they play like consecutively all the time. The fact they barely sometimes get to practice. So I think them getting to All-Star Weekend, they were just excited for that. Like, no practice. I get to hang around, you know, this group of women and, you know, just chill for a little bit. But it's crazy that they go back to work literally a couple of days after.
That part is festivity. Nuts. Part is nuts. The fact that I saw Tasha Cloud being like, wait, I'm supposed to play tomorrow? Like, a bunch of them are still hungover from the weekend. I mean, that's the other thing is, like, I think also if you paid attention to All-Star Weekend, you know they were out there to get some cardio and sweat out whatever they were doing the night before.
Man.
I think you and I have both had some late nights in Indianapolis before, which is very funny. So Indianapolis for the Combine is a very different city. The NFL Combine is a very different city than it is year-round. And there are a couple of spots that people go Indianapolis Combine Week that are very well-known. St. Elmo's Steakhouse, Prime 47 Steakhouse, Harry and Izzy's, which is attached to St. Elmo's. Like, these places are open till 1, 2, 3 in the morning. And my buddy, Chris Gores, who goes with me to Indy every year, my Train with the Best partner, he once went back to Indy like 2 weeks after the Combine because he had to do a training seminar. And he landed at like 9 o'clock and was so excited. He's like, I'm going to go get me a steak at St. Elmo's. He walks up to the door about 9:30, 9:45. And it's like, yeah, man, like we close at 10. Like we're not taking you. And he's like, wait, what? He's like, I come here for the Combine all the time. Like, you can get an 11 o'clock reservation. Like, you know, it's actually hard to get that reservation. And they're like, yeah, in Combine Week. But I thought the funniest like social post of the weekend was Angel Reese goes, man, we're in Indy, but it feels like Miami. When Indy wants to host and wants you to have a good time, they'll keep some spots open late. They'll do their thing. There are places you can go, and it seems like the ladies found them. It seems like they found them.
Yeah, they did. Zaire was out this weekend. Dude, he keeps meeting. He had a hell of a summer in terms of like meeting like celebs. He met Jay-Z. He met Kevin Durant this weekend.
Signed his Nike deal, too, didn't he?
Yeah.
Congrats to Z.
Yeah. So I'm just like, but he also confirmed.
By the way, KD in D.C. right now for the City Open.
Oh, word.
He was spotted at a tennis tournament today.
Uh-oh.
Anyway, you were saying? Zaire, Indy, late nights. Oh,
Z was basically confirming, like, WNBA All-Star Weekend was very lit. Like,
I mean, we saw it.
Yeah.
Thanks to the Stud Buds live stream. And, like, I think that was the cool thing, too, is, like, I think there's so much, like, I'll use the word. There's so much hate around the NBA. And, like, so much of the discourse is, like, so hate-filled. And, like, these women hate each other. They're, blah, and it's, like, all this, like, frankly, misogyny of just, like, people can't imagine, and men specifically, male sports fans, like, can't imagine that all these women, like, actually get along fine. And so it's, like, oh, Caitlin Clark hates this. Everyone hates Caitlin Clark. Angel and Caitlin. Everyone, these other group of people hate Angel. And then, like, you see them all hanging out at the club on Tisha Heideman and Courtney Williams live stream. And after years of them telling you, like, no, we don't hate each other. And you see, like, the sisterhood. And you see them come together for the WNBA PA stuff. You see them come together and, like, have fun. And you see them, like, Caitlin crashing Courtney's live stream. And like, whenever, like, that was one of my favorite things was anytime they needed something, they'd be like, where's Caitlin? She'll take care of it. Like, kind of having fun with Caitlin and Caitlin being like, yeah, what you need? Like, what? I got you. Like, it was just fun to see the whole, like, the stars of the league come together and to peel back the curtain. And in a way that was like, yeah, they're going to compete each other. They're going to try to kill each other on the court. And I'm sure on court, there's still rivalries. And I'm sure some of that, it's like, hey, it's fun for a weekend, but like, I actually really don't like you. And that's fine. It's sports. You're allowed to have a healthy disrespect for your opponent as long as it's healthy. But I just thought that was fun. And the reaction to it seemed to be, for those that were actually paying attention, pretty fun versus people you know, hating on it in a way that I feel like a lot of the discourse, or like toxicity around the discourse. Maybe I just was in the right places on social media or talking to the right people about it, but it definitely felt, it felt like a good weekend for the WNBA.
Yeah, I mean, those people I just don't think know what being a competitive nature or environment looks like. And for the women, that's how it is sometimes. And I think what was funny to me was Angel Reese and Alyssa Thomas joking on the court about, like, when Alyssa Thomas WWE chokeslammed Angel to the ground. And it's just like, I mean, and she probably didn't intentionally mean it, but, you know, that's what happens in the heat of battle sometimes. So,
yeah.
Yeah, which is cool, man.
I hate it when fans take it more personally than the players. That's like one of my least favorite things. It's like, if they can get over it, you can get over it. All right, when we get back, though, there is kind of the lingering question about the CBA stuff. We can get into some of that and some of the news that came out over the weekend. Then the Wizards have made a couple of moves, and there's been some other NBA news. We'll talk about that at 6:30. But first, the latest from the rest of the world of women's sports, presented to you by Wawa. Chicken how you want it. Wawa, with customizable, roasted, and crispy chicken sandwiches. It's Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, streaming live on the Odyssey app, iHeartRadio, and TuneIn. Anthony, I might want to audible here. I might want to do some of the Wizards stuff and the other NBA stuff real quick, because I just sent you something that we could just play in real things, but I kind of want to talk about the Jerry Jones, Micah Parsons situation at 6:30. And I just sent you, I just found this. I just got lucky that this worked out, because this is like a week old at this point. But Stephen Jones at a conference with Sports Business Journal from like July 9th, telling the story of the night that the Cowboys drafted Zach Martin over Johnny Manziel. And I think it's relevant to the Micah Parsons thing. And so I think I want to spend some time on that at 6:30. So graphic on the internet is going to be wrong in terms of the topic. We can talk about some of the WCBA stuff as more news comes out on that over hopefully the next weeks. I mean, got till August 7th for the trade deadline. They've got a lot of negotiating to do. The one thing I'll just say real quick on it, to say this, good slogan, pay us what you owe us. If you have a problem with that, then like, oh, you think people shouldn't be paid what they're owed? That's not the hard part. The hard part is figuring out what they're owed. And like, team owners should be in it to win it. They should not be in it to make money, but they also don't have to lose money to operate a league. Like, that is the push and the pull of it. I'm not like, yeah, the billionaires deserve all of the cash all of the time. And the players should just do it for the fun of the game. Like, no, you, as someone who is wealthy enough to own a sports team, I think that you owe it to your organization to try to win, and you will also make a lot of money if you win. But at the same token, I don't have any of the financials. It seems ridiculous that 9% is the rev share number. And I understand why the players want a lot more in 50-50. That's what the men get in the NBA. And I think the league is at a point with a $1 billion TV contract that seems far more feasible than it did a long time ago, because the numbers are so much bigger. The 50% now is probably more than the 90% was for much of the W's existence. So that is something that the PA needs to figure out with the league, et cetera, et cetera. Obviously, that's how CBA negotiations work. But from a messaging battle, the WNBA PA does a very good job. Pay us what you owe us. The shirts, which they're now selling, of course, I think is it was a good job. And the unification. Also, I think it's worth clarifying, Anthony. I don't know if you saw the Kelsey Plum thing that's going around, and she was like, oh, no members of Team Clark were there. That got twisted into like KP. This is why aggregation is stupid. It got twisted into KP, like, knocking the members of Team Clark for not showing up to like the meeting where they decided that, as like, oh, they weren't on board. She's making a joke and they were all hungover because the meeting was at 8:30 in the morning. That's like, it was very clear if you watched the clip, and like Caitlin talked about how her team was quote unquote team hangover. So they were all on board with the shirts, and like everyone was okay with it. It's just in the 8:30 AM ad hoc meeting where they just made the final decision to print them, print the shirts. Members of Team Clark were still recovering from the things we saw in Stud Buds the night before.
Nice.
Yeah. All right. NBA moves. I think the most significant move that happened over the weekend was probably, well, the two in combo are probably the Brad and CP3 to LA. Like, the Clippers are incredibly fragile because they're old / hurt. But, like, CP3 did play 82 games last year. And they don't need him to do a ton. He's got to be a backup point guard and help organize things. I'd also say getting James Harden, Chris Paul, Bradley Beal, Kawhi Leonard, like all together, that feels like a lot of personality. Even if some of them are, you know, like Kawhi is like famously reclusive, et cetera. Like getting that balance right, that is an experiment in chemistry. But I think for a team in the Clippers who is trying to squeeze the most they can out of the Kawhi Leonard era, knowing that like, hey, we made this investment many years ago at this point, the PG thing already, that ship sailed. By not paying PG, they were able to do a bunch of this stuff. Like, I'm obviously not Bradley Beal's biggest fan, but he's not terrible. He still averaged like 17 a game, I think it was last year. His shooting splits are very, very good. And so if you put all these guys in smaller roles on a team that won 50 games last year, if somehow they stay healthy, they're kind of a dangerous team. I just think no one is going to count on them to stay healthy. And if they have a good regular season, everyone's going to be like, yeah, but when is the other shoe going to drop? Because of Harden's playoff failings, Beal's injury history, CP3 is 38 years old in season 21 and he's not LeBron. Kawhi's injury history. It just seems unlikely that collection of players, even if they gel well and the personalities fit, that they are going to be able to survive four rounds of NBA playoffs in the way that these younger teams have really thrived the last couple of years. But I will say, like, I don't know how much better they could have done considering their situation. And I credit them for saying, like, we're going to give this thing a go as long as we have Harden and Kawhi. And if we get lucky on the injury front, like, we might win a championship and, you know, fulfill the prophecy, if you will. But the other alternative was to just, like, not be as aggressive and try to punt and trade, you know, everybody and start over. Like, run out the ground ball. Like, I kind of respect it. I think there's honor in what the Clippers are doing.
Yeah, I like these two moves. I definitely think this is for depth in terms of, you know, just because they're an older team. And also, Kawhi's probably not going to play 82 games.
Of course.
They probably don't want him to. So.
They need him to play 20 games in May and June.
Exactly. So I think Bradley Beal's, I'm not going to say like it's peak prime Brad, but like he's still a very good player. So I think them adding to their bench, I think they're going to be good.
On the Wizards front, they buy out Marcus Smart. They needed a roster spot. They also were kind of crowded in the backcourt. My guess is they would have loved to find a way to keep Marcus because of his veteran, like his presence. I mean, even dude, the cultural deposits, to use Will Dawkins' terms, that he made last year for guys like Bob Carrington, like the way those guys talk about him, like he already made a difference for the future of the Wizards. Now they can let him go and, you know, they can let him go and, you know, compete for a championship. Like, that's the hope. Obviously, the Lakers could definitely use a defensive stopper, and he is going to fit that role perfectly. So it's definitely interesting to see. But this allows, obviously, Bub to play more on the ball. This allows Trey Johnson to play more on the ball. It allows Will Riley to play on the ball and probably get more minutes than he otherwise would. So I understand why the Wizards did it. Obviously, it would have been great if they could have flipped him for something, but like they needed the roster spot, so they couldn't take a player back. Most of these teams are because of the cap rules, the luxury tax, the aprons. Like, it's not as easy as just being like, oh, just flip him. Like, how come you couldn't get at least a second round pick? Like, sometimes that's not how it works. And so they are able to just buy him out, get off some of the money, let him go, and then we'll see if they make any other moves. It does feel like there's a spot potentially in the front court, but the back court seems relatively set, but we'll see on that. All right. When we get back, we're going to make fun of Jerry Jones, because what more fun could you have on a Monday afternoon at 6:30? All right. Tomorrow on the show, ESPN.com's John Keim, who I can now tell you because the story is out, sat down with Mayor Muriel Bowser this afternoon. So Cakes sat down with Bowser to talk about the RFK situation. This, I think, was scheduled before the Trump comments over the weekend, but John obviously asked about that. Bowser saying, in part, we're on the 1-yard line when it comes to the RFK situation. My focus is on getting it done, despite what the president said. So we'll talk to John about that situation, about his interview with the mayor, as well as do a training camp preview. And hopefully, unlike our chat with Nikki Javala earlier, it won't get interrupted by an important phone call. But again, I know who called Nikki, and I approve of her taking the call. So I'm not mad at that Nikki had to back out on us. So Anthony, before I lived and worked in DC, which we are coming up on my 10 year in DC. I moved to Washington DC to work for ESPN 980 back in the day, as it was called at the time, in August of 2015. We are almost in August of 2025. The previous spring in the 2014 NFL draft, or I guess two springs prior, as a member of 103.3 ESPN, I remember debating for months there in Dallas, would Jerry Jones override his scouting department and take Johnny Manziel in the NFL draft? It was like the topic. Would it, one, will Johnny be there? Because you got to remember, we had covered Johnny in the college game, like at our Dallas radio station. He plays for Texas A&M. Texas college football is huge in Texas. The Cowboys are number one. College football is number two. So we spent plenty of time talking about Johnny as a freshman when he won the Heisman. Johnny is a sophomore when he's in trouble with the loss or the signatures and all that stuff, the ineligibility. And then, oh my God, is he going to get drafted by Dallas? If he would it work? Would that be a nightmare? Would that actually work out? Like, what is it? And I always wondered how much of that was hype and like us playing up a storyline that we wanted to be true versus like in the room as the Cowboys were debating, was it a real conversation that happened? And the reason I'm bringing this up now is because the sound we're about to play for you is going to tell you just how real that was. And two, this is who is making the decisions around, say, Micah Parsons, who is currently in negotiations with the Cowboys on some level about his contract, his future, and today, Jerry Jones stuck his foot in it in a major, major way. First, the Johnny story from his son, Stephen Jones.
This is nothing against Johnny Manziel. He's a great competitor, and it's just you use your first round pick. And of course, we had Tony Romo in the building. And so it was more about that. Do you create that kind of anxiety, you know, in the organization by bringing him in? Well, sure enough, Johnny Manziel falls to us. And boy, we get to go on. Well, let's talk about Johnny. Here he is. We got our guy. This is the future. And of course, everybody in the room, I look around. I go, it's time for everybody to talk. And I look, and everybody's.
I go, what? I go, Jason?
We want to see
Larry Lacewell. Even Larry, who talks all the time, straight down at the floor. And I go, Dad, I go, this is a hard thing because everybody knows you want Johnny. But I go, as you heard some of the things, I don't think he's the right guy for us. And so roll the clock forward, we end up picking Zach Martin. And boy, it is tense. Usually after every pick, we all know we're clapping, high-fiving. Boy, isn't that a great pick. Boy, after we pick Zach Martin, an offensive guard from Notre Dame, Jerry looks over at me, slaps me on the leg. And he goes, son, I didn't get to buy the Dallas Cowboys. We're not sitting here because you do down the middle of the road things. He goes, what you just did is down the middle. You'll never be great, huh? He gets off and stormed out. And boy, Larry Lace was sitting over there and Jason's sitting there and they're going, ooh, I'm glad that wasn't me. And then as soon as he walked out the door, but they said, thank you for standing up for taking Zach Martin. Sure enough, Jerry walks back in, which is typical Jerry. That was way over the top. I love you. We did the right thing.
Is that right?
And we re-celebrated Zach Martin. So,
and of course, Zach Martin is going to the Hall of Fame, and Johnny Manziel was out of the league in 3 years. But the mentality, the insight there to Jerry is it's like, oh, that was real. If it was up to Jerry and no one stepped to him, he would have been like, I'm taking Johnny Manziel. Also, does Steven sound like his dad, or does Steven do a good impression of his dad?
I think he sounds like him a little bit.
I think there's some too, which like tracks. That is his son. So that leads us to fast forward, roll the clock forward, as Steven said, to today. And Jerry talking with Brian Schottenheimer at the Cowboys pre-draft press conference, or pre-camp press conference. Again, the Commanders, by the way, do this tomorrow with Dan Quinn and Adam Peters. We'll play the best of at 6 o'clock. But here's Jerry talking about Micah Parsons.
Peter. Just because we sign him doesn't mean we're going to have him. He was hurt 6 games last year. Seriously. We've signed, I remember signing a player for the highest paid at the position in the league, and he got knocked out 2/3 of the year, Dak Prescott. So there's a lot of things you can think about when you, just as the player does, when you're thinking about committing and guaranteeing money.
Oh. By the way, fact check, Micah Parsons missed 4 games, not 6 last year. And that led to J.J. Watt, the now CBS analyst who will be calling games with Ian Eagle this year, and former multiple-time defensive player of the year, to tweet, anytime you can publicly take a dig at your star quarterback and your star pass rusher simultaneously right before the season begins, you just got to take it. Nothing makes guys want to fight for you more than hearing how upset you are that they got hurt while fighting for you. Which was retweeted by Micah Parsons. I'd also add on the Dak Prescott front that they didn't have to make him the highest paid player in football. They lost that negotiation by waiting 2 years after they should have. And the only significant thing that happened in between the time that they could have signed Dak Prescott to what was a big extension, but not what it wound up being, where he is still multiple years later by some metrics the highest paid player in football. I think he's got the highest cap hit this season in the NFL. The only significant thing that happened between then was Dak's ankle got turned the wrong way and he had to have surgery to repair it. So maybe Jerry is kind of about you and you're, oh, we got to do, can't do things down the middle. Oh, like sign players who are great at football to extensions on time. You want to play it out to see if they get hurt. And then even if they do get hurt, you sign them anyway to the biggest extension. Like, that's the thing that is wild about the Cowboys, Anthony, is that their irresponsibility in signing players is like, it doesn't ever help them. They don't then not sign guys. They don't win these negotiations. And that is why I am always, if you can at all help it, and this is why, like, I want to caveat this, because sometimes there's legitimate disagreements in value, like what seems to be happening between Terry and the Commanders. But, like, Micah Parsons, if you had just signed him, they could have signed him a year ago, I believe, to an extension. In that time, Myles Garrett has made $40 million. Now TJ Watt is at 41. They probably could have signed Micah Parsons and maybe could have gotten him for like 35 last year. Now they're going to have to pay him close to 45, my guess is, because he's way younger than Garrett and Watt. I don't know, man. It's, the Cowboys are so lucky they're very good at drafting, because the way they treat their free agents, where they wind up signing player-friendly deals that only wind up occasionally be looking team friendly if the player just is so good that, and the market moves in a way that's crazy. Like CeeDee Lamb's deal is going to look great because they signed him to a record deal and then the market exploded with Ja'Marr Chase. But it's crazy to me, man. Like, that this dude is like, how do you never learn your lesson? What lies is he telling himself? Where is the Jerry that came back in the room and was like, ah, that was a great move. Good job. It was Zach Martin. Woo! That Jerry needs to, if that Jerry would occasionally come in the room, the Cowboys would be better off. In the meantime, we rejoice and their ineptitude.
The jokes write themselves for the Cowboys, man.
And you know what?
It's mainly Jerry.
Yeah, you know what the punchline is, right?
What is the punchline?
How about them Cowboys? When we get back, we will wrap up the show with real things real people said into real microphones. It's Hoffman's show on the Team 980, streaming live on the Odyssey app, iHeartRadio, and TuneIn. Tomorrow on the show, John Keim. We will talk to Cakes, probably 5 o'clock. Haven't nailed down the time yet, but working on that. We also have the Adam Peters press conference tomorrow. We'll talk about our biggest offensive questions tomorrow, get some take command tomorrow. So, Anthony, sounds like we got a lot of stuff on docket for tomorrow.
Oh, no, we do. We definitely do.
Before we get to tomorrow, don't want to get too removed from the weekend without asking you. We know you were outside this weekend. Anthony, how was your weekend outside?
My weekend outside was a ton of fun.
Definitely sound a little hoarse.
I know.
My guy?
I know. I was yelling and screaming pretty much all weekend, to be honest. So my frat brothers, and this goes all the way back to like the 1970s. We have people from 1973, I think, was the earliest that had crossed. But yeah, they from 73 to 2024, we had brothers come all out. And it was just a great fellowship. We got a great chapter pick at the Orange and Blue cookout on Saturday. But
when so this I was tell like you, all kinds of alums from the Syracuse chapter or from all over the country?
Oh, this is just a Syracuse chapter.
Okay.
Yeah, so, everybody was, like, getting very emotional because they didn't expect all these people to show up and show out at the cookout. So, it was a great weekend.
Yeah. You
And you can hear it in my voice.
You definitely labeled the clip that we're about to play in Real Things. She sounds hoarse, kind of like me.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm glad you had a great weekend. I was so tired all weekend. At some point, the jet lag hit, and I was just toast. Just nothing.
So you got the rest up.
Yeah. Just absolutely smoked. But not for fun, just because jet lag got me. And I fell asleep on the couch multiple times this weekend. So that was fun. Also, my wife is the most voracious reader I've ever met. She has read, like, I think 3 books in the last, like, 36, if not 24 hours, as of this morning. She read 2 books yesterday, started a third, and finished it this morning. So yeah, it was like 3 books in 24 hours.
How does she read so fast?
I have no idea. I also spent some time reading this weekend. I didn't finish 3 chapters.
I was about to say.
She finished 3 books. And I don't think I'm like I literally asked her, I was like, am I a slow reader? And she's like, no, I don't think so. She's gifted in the reading category.
I'm terrible.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm terrible, but I ain't that. Anyway, let's find out who's horse like Anthony, because they were also outside this weekend. Come on, there we go.
Real things.
We're not going to be said this year.
Real people.
5-11, not very good.
Said into real microphones.
You know, the culture is actually damn good.
Natasha Clow, congrats to Tosh on the Skills Challenge win Friday night for the WNBA. But she was asked about the CBA negotiations that went down this weekend. And here those are.
Your CBA is coming up, and that's a big fight in itself. Y'all ready?
Well, I've been ready. I've been ready years ago. I was ready to sit out. Like, but like you said, we've always been at the forefront. That's been the blueprint since I came into the league. I was like, oh, we some bad women. Like,
yeah.
when we feel something, speak it. When we don't like something, say it. So that's always kind of been us. But into this new CBA, yeah, you're going to give us our money, and you're going to give us our money now, because we understand basic economics. Like, you're mm-hmm. talking to a league that we don't have leniency of, like, we can't go one and done. You're going to get a 4-year education. You're going to have a degree. So, like,
right.
We all understand basic economics. We're not asking for what our male counterparts are making, but we're absolutely asking for what our league is now driving revenue-wise. Yeah, you need to run us our money. Like, mm-hmm. you have to take care of the product on the court, because that is what makes your product overall better. So In this new CBA, no, we're fighting for more money. We're fighting for more rights. We're fighting for the next generation of women, right, so that they don't have to go through the same battles that we're going through today. Even little things like people don't know, we don't even get nothing off our jersey sales.
Right.
Like, mm-hmm. How is that even possible in a league where it's like, shit is sold out, so why am I not receiving money for that?
Hold up.
That from the Pivot Podcast. Anthony, I have bad news for you after hearing that clip.
Okay.
I think that's just Tasha's voice. Like, she's always got a hoarse voice. Like, I was expecting something more deviated from the norm.
Raspy?
Yeah. Like, Tasha just has a raspy voice.
Okay. Never mind, that's me then.
I have no doubt Tosh was outside this weekend having some fun in Indianapolis, as it seems like the whole league was. But I think that's just her voice. You earned yours, if you will.
I did.
All right. We'll see how Anthony's voice is tomorrow. We'll see y'all tomorrow. Have a good one. From all of us here at the Hoffman Show.